You're listening to a podcast from the Institute for Research on Poverty at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. I'm Dave Chancellor. For this podcast, I talked with Catherine Curtis of UW-Madison's Department of Community and Environmental Sociology. In a recent paper, Curtis, along with Paul Voss and David Long, looked at the way that racial and ethnic composition and economic structure are spread across space and how those factors relate to child poverty. Curtis says there have been a number of recent efforts to use spatially informed models to study poverty, but she says that these models have missed part of the picture.
These models are all talking about the relationship between county attributes and poverty as an average, which is to say it's generalized across all counties. And so what is missing, we think, in that approach is a consideration of the way in which relationships vary according to the local context.
So about this local context, as I was talking with Professor Curtis, I stumbled with this distinction of looking at relationships across space because it seemed to me that so many poverty-relevant statistics, which are available at the county or subregion level, were effectively already showing spatial difference. So how is it that the work that Curtis is doing is different?
I'm interested in space not in the sense of space as a purely locational quality, but what it is about space. So when I talk to folks, I often say, well, sometimes we're interested in time, right? And so we're interested in how time is a factor in some trend or some process. And the question is, well, what does time actually represent? Oh, well, there was this policy shift, or oh, there was this war, this conflict, or something happened at that point in time. And the same logic, I think, can be applied to the spatial domain, where we think about there's this container of space, but what does space actually represent?
To get at this, Curtis and her co-authors start by talking about the South. There's a common perspective in the literature that the South is distinct from the rest of the United States, the rest of the lower 48. Especially when you're talking about poverty.
Okay, so then the question is, well, what is it about the South that makes it so distinct? And when we look at the distribution of various attributes or various county characteristics that are often associated with poverty, we see a high concentrations of racial or ethnic minority populations, and we also see a high concentration of particular industries and those that are often associated with higher child poverty rates.
Curtis says that by taking these factors, by taking local context into account, you begin to see that it's more useful to think about a place defined by its social or economic characteristics than to simply generalize across a large section of the country, like when we talk about poverty in the South.
So when we think about space in these terms, or the South in these terms, we can think, well, is it the South and some unmeasured quality of the South, or is it actually something that we can measure in the South? And then when we think about it, it's like we know that populations of color are not exclusively concentrated in the South, but they're distributed in other places that also tend to be tend to report higher child poverty rates. And then specific industries like agriculture, service industries are also not exclusive to the South. They're found outside of the South.
I asked Professor Curtis for an example of how two spatial areas might have different drivers of poverty depending on the racial or economic concentration of each. She said that unemployment is a good example to look at. Poverty is mostly measured by income, so a family facing unemployment is going to have less income, thus leading to a higher risk of child poverty. But that relationship varies depending on spatially measurable demographic factors.
When we look at the relationship between unemployment and child poverty, we find a much more pronounced relationship in the low racial concentrated communities, counties, and a weaker association in the high concentrated communities. But what we see in communities with a high racial concentration is that the proportion non-employed, so those who are actually not engaged in the labor market, that factor is a stronger factor in places with a high racial concentration as compared to places with a low concentration.
According to Curtis, all this is to say that unemployment seems to be a bigger issue in places with a mostly white population, whereas non-employment is a more pronounced issue in communities with a high racial concentration.
So the way that one would approach unemployment is different than the way that one would approach non-employment. They're certainly related, but they're not the same thing. And why a population is not employed is different from why a population is unemployed.
Okay, so we can see that it's important to take local factors into account when you're trying to understand the drivers of poverty or child poverty, but what sort of real-world application might these kinds of ideas have? Curtis says that the study has two main aims.
One is that folks who are interested, groups who are interested in policy will pick this up and either pause and think about, oh, maybe we should take a look at state level or federal level policies aimed at poverty and think about how they can be more effective. Or for some, they may pick it up and find, yes, exactly. And I've been saying this for quite some time.
The hope is that this kind of work will give policymakers and local officials that have been saying this for quite some time a set of tools to make better calls about what sorts of safety net programs will actually be effective in a place.
It's not as though every place is unique, and that's certainly not what we are arguing or necessarily what we are finding. But what we are trying to do is find, what we, I think, are finding is that while no place is unique, there are different types of places.
Curtis says that identifying places that fit a type can then lead you to the question of, okay, what kinds of policy strategies make sense for this kind of place?
As we move forward and we develop, continue to push forward on theories of poverty, again, thinking about the spatial qualities of these processes, of inequality-generating processes, and rather than, I think, gearing towards generalized theory, maybe a generalized theory that accommodates local variation.
Professor Curtis is now working on a project focusing on shifts in poverty over space and time in the Upper Midwest. In this work, with UW-Madison statistician Jun Zhu, they're trying to show not just how space matters, but how things are changing over time alongside evolving economic and social factors. So stay tuned. Many thanks to Catherine Curtis for taking the time to talk about this interesting work. You've been listening to a podcast from the Institute for Research on Poverty.